You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. Today we have with us David Lytle and Charles Cook. They are the recent editors, the general editors of the book Arminian Baptist, a biographical history of Free Will Baptists. And so, guys, it's so good to have you here with us today. Thank you for joining us, David and Charles.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
We should point out that I think David is in a discotheque somewhere in California, and Charles is in a university. And he is in his son's bedroom, which is pretty cool. So thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a house full of people and a baby, and this is the quietest room in the house, you know. And so when your 11-year-old son's room is the quietest room in the house, that's when you know you got a loud house. So
you got a loud house. And you're probably used to doing that by reading this book and writing some of these chapters.
Yeah, that's so true.
Let me start out by asking you guys, so what led you to say, hey, this would be a good idea to do a book on Arminian Baptist, and in particular, Free Will Baptist? What got you in the direction to devote so much time to this particular endeavor?
Okay, well, I'll take that question since, I kind of pitched the idea to Charles. Both Charles and I have kind of, from when we were at Welch a long time ago, 20 years ago or so, you know, history and church history was always interesting to us. Charles has always been a kind of an avid reader and of Free Will Baptist history that I would always find out interesting information from. But I've been a history teacher and I did my master's in history and wrote on kind of 17th century General Baptist. So that's kind of academically where I sort of camp out. And I was, so recently I finished a master's of theological studies at Gateway Seminary. It's a Southern Baptist seminary here in, I live in Riverside. It's in Ontario, about 30 minutes away. For one of my classes, it was a Baptist history class. I had to read a book. I mean, we had to read several books, but we read one that was called, I think it was called Witness to Baptist Heritage. And it was a very similar sort of, here are 30 biographies of people of Baptists. So, you know, you have like William Carey and Spurgeon and a lot of really Billy Graham and, you know, a lot of really great names in there. And it was a really fun book to read. I really enjoyed it. And it made me think, hey, this sort of style of small kind of biographical, you know, digestible kind of chunks, you put that together and you got a really good book. My idea was, well, there's nothing really, you know, even as I was reading that one, Helwys, who is kind of the founder of the 17th century General Baptist, he has a biography in that other book. But aside from that, you know, nobody that sort of is in our stream was in the book, right? It was in no Free Will Baptist, no, very few 17th century General Baptist or 18th century Baptist, Free Will Baptist or General Baptist. So that was kind of the idea is to take the other, to take kind of our tradition and do a very similar kind of book. And I think it, you know, the finished product has actually surprised me. It's in the sense of, you know, I edited it and went through it and read it, but as I've kind of read it more of as a reader lately, it's what I wanted. It's short chapters that you can read in a sitting or two and just kind of get your feet wet in learning about the people in our tradition.
And I have to admit, I've not read the whole book yet, but I've told you guys this off camera. I started from the back and went to the front just because I knew a lot of the people from the back, but I did immediately read the first two sections. You know, in other words, it was hard to, we'll go to the next one. So it's, you accomplish that by making it very readable. So you've got this idea, you're doing this MTS at Gateway, which pretty cool school anyway, out there in California. And you pitch it to Charles and Charles like, nah, it's a bad idea. Or how did
yeah, so I do remember I was, you know, every summer, or not every summer, but most every summer, my family goes to Tennessee and Nashville just to spend time with my side of the family, because we live out here. And we were on a vacation, and so we drove through Cookeville, and I'm like, I'm stopping, and we're going to hang out with Charles. And we went to a park, and our kids played football, and I pitched it to him, and he was on board. And I really needed Charles, because, you know, when it comes to the actual, you know, Free Will National Association of Free Will Baptists, the 20th century, you know, from 35 to the present, that's his area more so than mine. You know, I'm kind of a more of a layman when it comes to that.
You're more of the older folks. Yeah. And Charles, you had actually interviewed a lot of these folks, especially the folks in the later part of the book, hadn't you?
Right. Yes. So David, when he pitched the idea, one important thing to know, when I was at Duke, I studied under a guy, Curtis Freeman, who he is a scholar in the emergence of Baptists in England. So that helped Dave and I working together, even though I wouldn't consider myself, my expertise is not in the emergence of Baptists in England. I took one class with Curtis on that, and it was an independent study. So I was immersed in that world. And so Dave and I could have conversations, knowledgeable conversations. And he's kind of undersold himself a little bit, because his parents were missionaries, as you know, and very active in National Association work. So although Dave may not have known all the details, he knew some of the stories, he knew some of the players, he knew some of the things that have shaped our identity better than probably your average individual would. So that worked really well, even though we both had different expertise. We both have a similar philosophy of how history should be written, what you should be trying to accomplish. And we had a similar understanding of how to understand Baptists. So that allowed us to work really, really well together. I don't think there was one time that Dave and I discussed an issue where we had a major disagreement, really. I mean, so that was really, really cool. I did interview. So around when I was a student at Welch, I'll try to make this brief. I wandered into the old library, as you know very well, and I wandered up to the top floor where they just had a lot of materials just laying around. And I read some things that were going on in the late 50s, early 60s in North Carolina, where you ministered at. Mm-hmm. And I knew one piece of the story of what was going on in North Carolina in the 50s and 60s, but I was amazed when I started reading the firsthand accounts of people involved and people that were my professors, you know, your professors that were young, that were involved in this, and individuals that became very important leaders that were engaged. And when I began to read that, it just got me really interested. And my mother's from South Carolina, which was a part of that world of some important things going on in the late 50s, 60s in South Carolina. And that got me interested, because then I found out I had relatives that were involved on various sides of the issues. And then that got me asking my mom questions. And then Daryl Holly helped me a lot. Matt Pinson helped me discover some resources. And I go to Duke, and I'm trying to think about what to write my thesis on, and decide to write about how did the National Association of Evangelicals get on the speed dial of the Bush presidency as they ran up for his reelection, the second Bush. And like, how did this organization, how did that happen that they became involved in that? So as I began to study the NAE, that led me to Billy Melvin. And to be honest, that's what I was more interested in. I was more interested in Billy Melvin and the Free Will Baptist piece. Yeah. They were more interested in the evangelical, you know, piece. So I combined both things in my research. I never imagined a book like this would happen, but I thought, I bet I can get some papers out of this. And
you did.
Yeah. And so that happened. So long story short, I decided I'm going to interview some people, and particularly in how did the institutions as we know them now that are part of the National Association, how did they emerge in the 50s and 60s? So that led me to interview the people I did. And I'll tell you where I got the thing that opened the floodgates up, where people really started talking and really started sharing really good information. was I interviewed Michael Pelt first for Mount Olive.
Yeah.
And I think once the other people knew that I had Pelt's perspective, that made them really in a very positive way. I mean, it was all positive. Pelt's was positive, even though there's some strong disagreement. Some folks decided, I think, like, well, I want to share, you know, what I felt. And I went back and listened to the interviews over Christmas break, anticipating this. And I think, you know, like Ralph Hampton, there was clearly some things he wanted to share, that he wanted to say about people that had been forgotten. Mm-hmm. And people that for various reasons, just some of it political, maybe, that had been forgotten, that he felt like we need to remember these people because we wouldn't be here if they hadn't done what they did. And there's got to be a way to talk about this that allows us to remember our past. Yeah. And so once Hampton shared, Jack Williams, and then I talked to Billy Melvin some, and Dr. Pick, he knows it all. He knows it all because he worked at the college. He was the moderator. He's a deep thinker. He's from South Carolina. So he, you know, has roots across, you know, he has multiple roots, and he studied the history and he was a part of the history. And so Pick really opened up and shared a lot of things that you wouldn't know if he hadn't shared them. I mean, if he had, once he shared that allowed me then to follow up with Billy Melvin. And Billy gave more info about things going on in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then I got Leroy Fourlines, I think, last. And he was very generous as well. So that's kind of how it happened. And I do intend to, at some point, turn that information, those tapes, over to the Historical Commission. And there's a lot of great info on them.
Yeah, and so many of those guys are gone. And so it sounds like part of what you all were trying to do, though, is not let these folks be forgotten as well. We should point out the last person is Dr. Pick, really, in the book. So I think, is it 39 folks that you're looking at here?
Let me look at it. I think it's 28-something. Yeah, 28.
Yeah.
So I'll just kind of go, just to give a general sense of what the book is. So first section, there's seven biographies on people from the 17th century, early General Baptist, including Paul Palmer, who kind of bridges those things. And then the next kind of, nine are on the 18th and 19th centuries. So you're talking about the early kind of colonial Free Will Baptist and or General Baptist, kind of a little bit of the name kind of goes either way. And then Benjamin Randall, early of kind of the Randall movement up north, with several biographies on those people, as well as the Southern kind of the Palmer, you know, because just to, for those who don't know any of an early Free Will Baptist history, there's basically two threads. This is oversimplified, but you have the Northern movement of Benjamin Randall and the Southern movement of Paul Palmer and kind of their descendants. So that's kind of the first two thirds ish of the book. And then taking us to the 20th century. And then the last section, which is the biggest section, there's 11 biographies on various people of the 20th century. That kind of deal more with the modern National Association, which is what Charles was just talking about. So the book kind of covers all of Free Will Baptist history. It's in an introductory way, but it does kind of get more details as we get to the more modern side of things.
Charles referred to them earlier as players. So you've got all these different people kind of playing a part through history. It had to be hard to get it down to, you know, 28 folks here. How did you guys go about selecting the people that would be included? And even though someone might not have a chapter on them, there's information about them because of people that you're dealing with. But how did you do that?
Dave, why don't you go first and kind of talk about the earlier folks, and then I'll go second and talk about the latter folks that are included?
Well, some of it, and just to be kind of honest, some of it kind of depends on who you can get to write, right? So that's a part of it, because we knew we weren't doing all the writing. We did a good bit. I think we both wrote 4 chapters, and then kind of the introductory pieces. But we knew we weren't going to do all the writing. So this is an edited collection. So we got people, and you know, Matt Pinson writes in it, Kevin Hester. Just a bunch of Welch people as well. Yeah. My parents wrote a chapter on the Willies, some people from Randall. So we tried to get a variety of people to write. But that's not the easiest thing, you know? And so that was really probably the biggest challenge of this book. You know, Charles and I, like, we saw, you know, we didn't disagree. And it's not, we didn't have, you know, too many problems with our contributors, but or really any problems with the actual people who contributed. But getting people, you know, trying to knock down this door and get someone to, so some things just fell through that we would like to have seen. And that's just the reality of, you know, who's able to do it and whatnot. So part of it was, you know, who we got to write and what they're able to write about. So we try to get people who this was kind of their area of expertise, and to really contribute to what we wanted to see. So we kind of came up with a preliminary list, and we would throw out names and kind of make a list. At some point, I know when we pitched it to Randall House, they had some names they wanted to see. So we were like, okay, we'll do our best. And then I know, and I'm not, I think it was Matt Pinson when I sent him a request to write for us, he was glad to do it, but he also had some, he said, hey, let me see the list of who you're including. And he had some names that we worked in there too, because he does, you know, for both Charles and I, Dr. Pinson has been someone who has kind of helped in a lot of ways of just, you know, introducing us to some of these things that we wouldn't have known otherwise. So he was helpful. Anyway, anything else, yeah. Charles?
Well, so one way the book changed, when Dave first pitched the idea, we were going to look outside of the Free Will Baptist stream. And so we were going to look at guys like Roger Olson. I remember that was the name of an Arminian who's very important. And we were going to go a little more global with it. And so when you get to the 20th century, that's where a lot of that was going to happen. When we talked to Randall House, it became clear it would be easier on us and it would help focus the book more as we moved on in the 20th century to just narrow down to Free Will Baptist. And that was good advice for us. So when that happened, Pinson came back. We didn't have Dr. Johnson in the list. Uh-huh. For those who may not know, he's a president of the Bible College. And I would say, I now personally believe, as more time has gone on, that Dr. Pick is the most important writer, thinker, leader that the movement's had. But when Dr. Johnson passed off the scene, I would say he was the most influential. I just think Pick has written more and his influence now overseas. But we didn't have Dr. Johnson. And the reason we didn't is because we were thinking about influence beyond just Free Will Baptist. And so we thought, well, if you've got Leroy Fourlines, you've got Robert Piccirilli, you've got people that were influenced by him and his ideas. When it became about Free Will Baptist, I believe, if I can remember this email right, Dr. Pinson was like, you got to have Dr. Johnson in the book. And he's right. And if since you've already read backwards, Dr. Johnson's ideas, both that people agreed with and disagreed, are a key part of how things played out in our movement. So when that advice to add Dr. Johnson really makes from World War II to the end of the book, that's really key to understand. And Paul did a great job of really getting at the heart of the character of Dr. Johnson and how what a godly man he was and his influence. And then Billy Melvin and J.D. O'Donnell, they're in some ways have a different vision in some ways. Some ways they don't. Some ways they're right with him. But in some ways they had a different vision. And then Dale Burden, he has a little different vision, too. So adding Dr. Johnson was great advice, but that's one way the book changed. We, you know, so take Dale Burden. We felt like one important thing for me was I knew that Dale Burden, a lot of people only know him through denominational controversy. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate. And I hope that chapter, when you read it, you realize like this guy was a visionary for what could happen in the pastorate. And from having an African-American deacon to having a weight ministry, a weightlifting ministry with people to just, and some of that got edited out, but he had a weightlifting ministry with a guy that then people started coming to, that then when he went to Virginia Beach, blew up into a youth ministry that was part of the equation. And so, you know, it was important to us, like this guy's really important, but people don't understand what gave him a lot of the credibility he had. And we felt like, you know, Billy Melvin kind of represents a different side. They disagreed at times, but they're both really important to who we are. And I think people from various groups, maybe I hope this book helps them appreciate them more, both of them, for what they brought to the table and what they've done. And so that was an important part of mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Dr. Moody? I mean, that was
it does. Does. And you can't put everyone in. I mean, it's already
book. Yeah, it's fairly quick.
So you're trying to get people to get a feel of our history and a feel of these people. I do wonder what I know all of them have in common, Arminian and Free Will Baptist. Are there other like threads or like even you alluded to it a minute ago where folks may disagree, but or it's felt like they were disagreeing at the time, but yet really we're kind of going after some of the same things. What are some common threads, maybe about their character or in, you know, that kind of popped out that you see in all these people?
They're all serious. I mean,
they are.
They're serious. Some of them may be workaholics. I don't know if they all have that in common, but I mean,
a lot of that.
Yeah. I think there's a borderline workaholic. I don't know if it's a gene or what it is. You'll notice the theme of revival runs through this. Mm-hmm. Even you get the 20th century, like if you pay attention, many of the biographies, it may just be one sentence, but it'll say like they accepted Christ in revival, or like John L. Welch, apparently he preached some revivals, like when in North Carolina, he preached one in Aiden that clearly helped earn trust with Aiden. So like this theme of revival and the importance of revival meetings, both North and South, although they play a little differently, revivalism has been a huge part of people getting together among Free Will Baptists and we're together. That's a way that trust was earned. If an individual could preach the gospel in a way that connected with hearers, would you agree with that, Dave? I mean, I think that's seen throughout.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the case, especially as we get, you know, you don't have that same sort of revivalism in the 17th century. It's pre-Great Awakening. So there is sort of a change just in church history. You know, conversion's always been a part of the Christian faith, but things do change in the mid 17 or early 1700s with Whitfield and their influence, but you see that change on this stream with Randall and also the Southern line, and then ever since then that's really been, yeah, there's this strong revivalism that's been part of the movement. That you know, it's good to think about, to say, hey, you know, we have roots that maybe, you know, you think about someone like Thomas Grantham from the 17th century. It predates that kind of revivalism. Mm-hmm. And so, there are some lessons we can learn from people who don't really have that same kind of approach. Right. And I think, you know, Grantham is a good person to learn from. But at the same time, we don't need to neglect what the kind of, you know, George Whitfield, Billy Graham kind of Christianity, which we see in our movement as, you know, the Benjamin Randall and, you know, even Lizzie McAdams kind of Christianity, like what that has actually produced and benefit, you know, we've benefited from that. So I think it's good to kind of see both. I was going to say, as far as the 20th century, I mean, I really liked what Charles did and, in kind of breaking things down. And this is just something for people to think about as they read about the 20th century. I mean, we kept it biographical. We didn't just focus on controversies. It wasn't just like, oh, well, here's this controversy and this controversy. Those do come up in the biographies, but we kept it biographical. But just the, I mean, as far as this Free Will Baptists are concerned, the tension between are we fundamentalists or are we evangelicals? Mm-hmm. And you know, getting into what those terms mean can you know, there's a lot to think about through there, and there's not really an easy answer to that question. That's really been at the root of a lot of disagreements, perhaps, and the kind of conflict that Charles was talking about. And mm-hmm. It's a great question to sort of work through and to think deeply about. And you know, you'll find evidence for both of those things for sure. But if you're going to move forward, I think you have to kind of think about that sort of question and how best to answer it.
That's good. So I'm going to put you both on the spot a little bit. This will probably be harder for you, Charles, because a lot of these people we know, but like, who would you say was kind of a favorite character, or maybe it could be someone that you were a little bit surprised, you know, as you're editing and someone else wrote the chapter. But for each of you, who was kind of a favorite for you in this book?
So I'm going to say two. Okay. One was an individual I wrote on. E.L. St. Clair for me, was a big one. Although he expressed a view at the end of his life that I disagree with. And, in one way was sad to read, you know, I'll give this away to people who haven't read the book. He basically gave an explanation for depravity or inherited sin or original sin, as I think most Free Will Baptists today would embrace. He had a different take on things, but understanding his context and what he was wrestling with and what he was going through, although I was on a personal level, kind of saddened to find one thing I found about him, I was overjoyed to see how the Lord, we can have a wrong view, but the Lord still use us in a mighty way if we're committed to him. And that doesn't excuse, you know, a view that I would say, boy, that's not right. But God used him mightily in a mighty way. And if you read the chapter, you'll see that. And he was very important to who we are. So now, at the same time, as a historian, I was thrilled when I found this thing. I had both emotions at the same time. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe. I told my mom, Dr. Pick sent me a thing saying, wow, this is really good work. You found like original research here. And that's probably one of the proudest moments of my life, to be honest, just that simple statement. Yeah. So as a historian, I was excited. As an individual, I was like, oh, man, I wish that wasn't part of my story.
True.
Yeah, but so I enjoyed that. In the modern era, I knew a lot about Dr. Pick because my mom's from the same town he's from. My parents went to the Bible college kind of in his prime, teaching prime and stuff. And then I had him as a professor for a course. But reading Paul's, there was stuff in Paul's that I didn't know. And I think my appreciation for him. And I think Dr. Pick, he understood the various sides of our movement. And I think he made I don't know if this just happened over time and it evolved that he came to this, but he really helped us with this question Dave brought up of trying to define our identity. He stated in the late 70s what we ought to do. And basically was, we need to get busy about what we believe, who we are, what we can accomplish. And we're not going to solve all the pieces that don't add up for everybody else. And he's not advocating, you know, this loosey-goosey theology, or that's not, but he was like, we need to get focused on what we can accomplish, what we can do, and who we are. And if you look at his ministry, that's what he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, this history work Dave and I did, he's the one who collected all this stuff for the story. There were other people too, but he did a lot of the hard work on the Historical Commission. You look at the books that he's written since he retired.
Yeah.
When I was a student at Welch, and you might have been there, he wrote that paper on a plea for scholarship. If you go back and read that, okay, that's 20 years ago, roughly. He writes that like he's about to pass off the scene. Go look at what the man has done in the last 20. I mean, he wrote that. It's like, hey, I'm kind of, you know, I'm about to pass the scene and I'm worried about some things. And I just want to share my heart. And look at what he did over the next 20 years. And that shames me in my own academic work. I mean, I look at that, I think, man, this guy, this is incredible. So Dr. Pick would probably be my favorite in the 20th.
That's good. You got more of the older folks, David.
Well, let me just say this about Piccirelli. I mean, Piccirelli is the only one who he wrote for us.
Yes.
He wrote biographies of.
He's got a chapter about him too. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, he makes it in both. So he's you know, he's both the, you know, we had to rely on his scholarship because he's the best we have, but he's also, yeah, so he wrote about Welch and he wrote about Lizzie McAdams. And then we wrote a chapter on him, Paul Harrison did. So yeah, so that's pretty impressive in and of itself. So who would I put on there? Well, I really enjoyed doing research, and this, because this was new research for me. I did David Marks, who is a, you know, kind of a, from the Randall line of Free Will Baptist, and you know, that was kind of a new world for me, and it, you know, it was pretty introductory. And I didn't get super deep into all his theology or anything like that. But I really enjoyed reading and writing about him. He died at the age of 40. So, I mean, I'm older than that now. He started preaching at the age of 15 and just traveled on horseback all around the Northeast into Canada, and Ohio, just, you know, and he's from New England. He's from upstate New York, actually. Yeah. And he traveled all around preaching. He was very active in, obviously he was a revivalist, but he active in the anti-slavery movement, active in getting kind of home missions started among the Randall line, active in getting foreign missions started. So he kind of was, he had his pulse on everything that movement was doing, for about 20 years. And I think, you know, what Charles said about people kind of workaholics. I mean, I think he genuinely just wore his body out and died young, because of just his zeal for ministry. And, you know, not that I don't think that's an example to copy, but it is something just fascinating to read about and in some ways inspirational. So he was really interesting to me to find out a lot more about. And that gets to another, you know, another question that, or issue that I just think as historian, you know, I kind of come to this from a historian's lens. You have some early Free Will Baptists that had slaves, and that, you know, I don't think we have a lot of literature to any literature that is from Free Will Baptists endorsing slavery explicitly, but we do. I mean, there's slavery in the movement among kind of early colonial early 19th century Free Will Baptists. And then you have the kind of the Randall side of things that became one of the most staunchly abolitionist groups in the country. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kind of have both going on in those two kind of separate streams. And that just makes for, I think, interesting historical investigation to kind of see where that issue is as far as like our identity.
The footnotes, Dr. Moody. So Dave, an important thing Dave wanted that not all, but most chapters accomplished. If you, hopefully these chapters will help future people start on research and be able to know the important sources a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So on this issue of slavery, I mean, this is an issue. And it continues on into the beginning of the, you know, from E.L. St. Clair. And there was something there I found on a thing on feet washing he watched, where there's sort of a African-American trope presented that would be really problematic today. There are some things that did come up in National Association meetings. If you start digging, that race is clearly involved in some of this. And we need a scholar to help us research this and think about this and talk about it in a mature way. So to the bigger point, Dave was really like, one thing this book can help people with is all these footnotes. They'll now know where to go to start digging into other issues. So I hope this is a resource for people that go on, and not just seminary and divinity school, but who do and are going to write papers and do research. These footnotes, I think, are going to be a great resource to help people.
Mm-hmm. And so they can, it'd be good for all of us to dig into the history. And there's quite a rich history, especially on the northern side, with you alluded to it, Dave, with the abolitionist movement and the colleges that were founded and all. It's pretty good. So you're saying it'd be great for people to look at doing some master's thesis in history to go into this a bit more. What about the regular common reader, if you will, Free Will Baptist, Arminian out there? What is it that you're hoping that they'll take away from this book?
You want to go first, Dave?
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I do think that we tried. So, you know, just to follow up on what Charles said, we have these sections in the book, or not sections, but after every biography, we have a for further study section. Mm-hmm. And then we'll give you three or four, maybe five books to go to. And then there's things are also footnoted. So it is kind of introductory in that sense. Hey, here's where you really are going to find out more information. So I do think that, you know, we tried, and I think some articles do this more than others or some chapters, but we tried to sort of be academic enough to where, you know, we were careful in what we said, but also kind of on the lay level enough. So I think someone who is, you know, I mean, I think a college sophomore should be able to read this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't expect one of my, I'm a high school teacher. I don't expect one of them to pick it up. But I think someone, you know, around that level, I don't think this is not a book for, you know, for people that are doing PhDs, you know, it's not on that level. You know, the chapters are short, they're readable for the most part, and that they are introductory, and that's their, you know, that's the intent of them.
Very good. Well, thanks for writing it, guys. I mean, this has been a long process. I know for you, a lot of work, a lot of hiding in your son's room, perhaps, to edit all of this. And we encourage folks to go check it out. They can get the book at d6family.com. We encourage them to purchase it through Randall House if possible. I'm sure it will be at other outlets as well. But to check that out. And guys, we just appreciate you taking the time to join us today and share your heart about why you did this particular book and what readers can get from it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We want to thank you for taking the time to listen today. If you know someone that would benefit or be interested in this podcast, please take it, share it with them. Remember, every little thing we do can be helpful, especially when we work together, because we're better together.